Turtle Island to Palestine. Occupation is a crime. Free, free Palestine. You're listening to Radio Free Palestine.
We're going to listen to a documentary right now about Palestinian children, and it was about children in the Haisha refugee camp, arrested, beaten, interrogated, tortured, and imprisoned by Israeli forces. It's presented by our colleague Nora Burrows-Friedman from Flashpoints KPFA in California. Here is Nora Burrows with a documentary on Palestinian children and the suffering they face under Israeli apartheid.
In the occupied West Bank city of Bethlehem, I'm Nora Burrows-Friedman. We continue our focus on the impact of Israeli policies on the children of occupied Palestine. Today, we take a look at the story of three boys, two young brothers from Hebron and one teenager from Dehesha refugee camp, who have experienced arrest, detention, imprisonment, interrogation, and beatings at the hands of Israeli soldiers. On Sunday, February 28th, Amir and Hassan Motahseb, 10 and 12 years old, were on their way to a relative's house in the old city of Hebron. They were playing in the street when two Israeli soldiers captured them and handcuffed them and threw them in the back of two separate jeeps. Hassan, the 12-year-old, was brought to an interrogation room at nearby Kiryat Arba settlement colony, blindfolded and shackled for hours before being transferred to Ofer prison near Ramallah, where he would stay for 7 days before being released last Sunday, March 7th, when the Israeli military judge in court admitted holding Hassan in prison was against the law. On the condition of his release, Hassan still has to appear in court at a later and undetermined date. While Hassan was being transferred to Ofer prison, his little brother Amir was detained at the settlement colony for 10 hours, blindfolded and handcuffed to a chair. I sat down with him on Thursday, March 3rd, at his house in Hebron. We begin with Amir's voice, translated by Shadi Al-Assi.
Me and my brother, we were going to my aunt's house, and in our way, there were two soldiers. They just stopped us, and they told us, come here, we want to talk with you. And they arrest us, they capture our hands, and they put me in a jeep and my brother in another jeep. Then they took me to this school, Osama school. He told in the beginning, I saw a lot of settlers and a lot of soldiers. They were there. They put me in a corner, and they bring a dog, and they put it next to me. And he asked them if he would like to go home, and they said, no, you will stay here forever. And I would like to use the bathroom, and also they refused. And he stayed there from 8, like he was captured, and they covered his eyes in the end. And he was from 3 o'clock in the afternoon till, he don't know exactly, like 10:30, his father, he come and he take him.
What was going through your head? Were you very, very afraid that they would keep you for long? Mm-hmm. What did you need at that point?
He said the first thing comes to my mind is how to go home, how to run away and go home. And I was so afraid, especially because they put just the dog next to me, and every time he was shouting at me, so I was really afraid. But the first thing comes to my mind, it's my family and how I will run away and go to my place, to my house.
Afterwards, are you able to sleep? Are you able to eat? Do you feel okay?
لا برد لحد اليوم برد بخوف.
شو أكلتك المفضلة؟
البطاطا.
He say like till now, like I had some problems. I don't sleep. I don't sleep well, and I feel so afraid. And I asked him, what's your favorite food? He told me the potato.
did they hurt you? Did they attack you or beat you? What happened in those 7-10 hours that you were gone?
لا بس انا بس غموا لي عيناي وظلتني قاعده على الكرسي
He said, like, they arrest me, they put me in a chair, they capture my hands and they cover my eyes. And most of the time, like, they didn't beat me in a direct way, but they used to say bad words to me. And every time I say something, they said, shut up, don't do anything, just shut up, you know. And they bring him water, and he refused to drink. He was offered to drink their water.
What was it like coming back home when you saw your father, who came to get you finally? What? How did you feel?
عادي. هي كنت خايف أول.
لا أنا زمان شفت أبوك شو أنت شو عملت هيك أصلاً.
شو عملت وش كيف حسيت
يعني؟ انبسطت إني فلت من بين إيديهم.
He said, in the beginning, the first time I saw him, I was so afraid. I thought there was something big gonna happen. But the moment I left from there, I was so happy because, like, I ran away from their hands, you know? So I was so happy.
Amir, what do you want to do when you grow up?
Doctor.
Doctor?
Doctor
is?
Jirohi.
He would like to be a doctor. And special doctor who make the...
On the heart?
Yeah.
Yeah, heart surgeon.
Yeah.
He wants to be a heart surgeon. What do you want to say to the children of America?
I want to shed them and ask them to look at Palestine. How do they do it? We معاملة سيئة.
إحنا أطفال حقنا.
وإحنا برضو أطفال حقنا إننا نلعب ونروح ونجي.
Yeah, he would like to tell them. He would like to tell them like we are kids like you. We have the right to play, to move freely, to feel like you. Nothing more than this. At the same time, to tell them, so I would like to tell them how, the way how the Israelis and how they treat us. While we are kids, we are like 10 years, 9 years, 12 years, we can find kids 7 years inside the Israeli jails now, you know. And all what we want from you is just to look at us and try to help us to reach our freedom and to reach the freedom of movement, the freedom of playing, you know, like you.
That was 10-year-old Amir Motahseb speaking last Thursday. Amir's mother, Mukarram, had this to say about Amir and Hassan's treatment.
يعني لما يعني احكوا انه اليهود اخذوا الجيش اخذوا الاولاد يعني كيف يعني ايه بدها تتقبل انه اثنين لسه صغار يعني الاثنين قاصرين يعني حتى اطفال كمان اقل من يعني هذا عمره 10 سنين وهذاك لسه يعني ما تجاوز 13 ونص لحسن واخذوهم يعني
وقت she said like the first moment she got the news she was really afraid of for the kids and as like any mother you know there are kids you know like if they are adults it will be okay but they are kids and they don't know how to handle their problems and when she knew that al-amir he's in this school the you know it's in a school an arab school that Israelis they occupied and there was a lot of settlers in there so she said I was afraid not from like from the soldiers but I was afraid more from the settlers themselves because there's a lot of settlers in there and I was afraid about the kid the moment I saw him like till now like he couldn't sleep sometimes in the night he can't go to the school he refused to go to the school he's so afraid so all these things affect me so much like I really feel so bad for them and for what's happened with them and about Al-Hassan like the one who's still in the jail like as any mother like she had a kid he's like between 12 and a half to 13 years old nothing more than this so I can't imagine like a kid like this he will be in the jail he has to live and to with old people with adults and you know so it's not easy for me to understand what's going on with the kids what's happened with Amir and what's going to happen with Hassan I can't imagine my kid he's waking up at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning for like he stand in line just to be sure that he's there you know so I don't know how he can handle it inside the Israeli jails.
This is a story that's very common, unfortunately. And people in, you know, in the States, in the United States, they don't know about this story. It's kept very much underneath the headlines. If you could speak directly to the people of the United States who pay the tax dollars to fund the Israeli occupation and the military that does this kind of thing to children, to your children, what would you say to them?
يعني بالنسبة للعايشين في أوروبا وأمريكا هيك بدهم يزوروا كيف أطفال فلسطين أو يعني كيف بتعملهم
What I would like to say, it's not to stop paying taxes, no, continue paying taxes for the Israelis. But you have to know about what's going on here, and after that, you will stop by your own. I'm not going to tell you to stop. Like these kids, the Israelis, they dealt with them as terrorists. And for the Israelis now, it's to kill the new generation. It's better for them to, more than to kill the old people. Because they see them, they see the future in the kid in the eyes of these kids. All what they did, that they refused this occupation, all what these two kids did, that they carry a stone and they try to resist against the jeeps and the tanks and all these things, nothing more. You know, they refuse to be under an occupation, and the Israelis died. They consider them as terrorists, people who would like. They dealt with them in the same way how they deal with fighters, with people who carry guns. They are kids. He's like 9 years, 10 years, and the other one he's 12 years. Nothing more than this. So even if they throw stones at the Israelis, what gonna happen? Nothing. You know. So all what she wanted is just to look at the Palestinian kids and to try to help the Palestinian kids to go out of this. Situation. She say like Al-Amir now, he refused to go to the school. He's afraid from going out of the house. If anything happened around, he refused to go out because he's this time they arrest him for 10 hours. Maybe next time they will kill him. You don't know. So all what she wants is just to care and to watch what's going on here. Nothing more than this. She say in the court, one of the lawyers, she's an Israeli lawyer, her name is Leah. She was there not because of Hassan, she wanted to help other people, other adult people. But when she saw the kid, she take all the papers from her bag and was searching for something. Then she found the red balloon, and she give it for him, and he start to play with it. And in that moment, the judge, he was really shy from what he's doing. You know, a kid, he's sitting in just inside the fence, and
they put them in a cage.
Yeah, like a small cage, and he don't know what to do. So he was trying to hide his face from the cameras and from the people. You know, so. Even one of the lawyers, he asked Hassan, he told him, when you want to go home, you know, just to encourage him to be brave enough and something like this. He told him, you know, I was thinking about going back yesterday, but I don't know the way to go to Hebron, so I need someone to come and pick me from here, you know. So just, that's just to show you how even the way of the thing, this kid, he think, you know, just the small dreams, you know, just he would like to go back home, nothing more than this, you know. He dream about the house, you know, like, I don't know the way to go back to the house. That's all his problem.
How are you preparing for Hassan to come back, and how are you dealing with Amir's trauma right now?
بالنسبة للحسن يعني إن شاء الله بيروح أول إشي يوم الأحد بس إنه لو إنهم يعني اليهود ما بدها
She say she hope he will go home on Sunday, and but even if that doesn't happen, that if he stay in the jail, she hope when he will be released, he will go out of the jail as a man, like a young man, 14 years old, a young man, you know. But that's what the Israelis want, you know. If they want to release him, they could release him from the moment he was here. But they want him. They want to create fredness inside this kid to don't do anything in the future against the Israeli occupation. And she's sure, if he's staying in the jail, that means that the Israelis, they want him to be in the future someone who works against this occupation. You know, like a kid, he's 13 years old, he's in the jail, he saw all these things around him. Of course, in the future, he will not go out of the jail and he will become a peacemaker. You know, he will be something completely different. He will know and he will try to resist against this occupation. And he will know that this occupation and these Israeli police and these Israeli government did something wrong for him when he was a kid. So in the future, I think he will be something completely different. He will try, I hope he will try to resist and he will try to refuse this occupation. And she hope he will go home on Sunday, you know, and they're going to have a party here.
And Amir, you know, what are you afraid of in the next coming days and weeks and months and years?
قبل ما ياخذوا الولد كان اجرأ من هيك ما يخافش من اليهود. هلا لما اخذوا اليهود وحجزوا له 10 ساعات عندهم صار عنده يعني عامل
شي ساي. Like a lot of things happened, a lot of big changes happened between before they arrest him and now. Like before, he used to go out, he used to play a lot in the street, and you know, he used to go to school by his own, and he never ever think about like he never ever been afraid before. For him now, it's like very hard, and she hope like in the future, in the soon future, he will become normal again, because it affects him a lot, like psychology, the psychologist way, healthy, everything, you know? Like he don't eat that much, he don't sleep well, he don't go out, he refuse to go to the school alone. Every time he's waiting, he asks the family if there is internationals who would like to, who will come here to talk with him so they can take him home or not, you know, or to, they can take him to the school. So she hope everything will be fine in the soon future, and she hope he will return back as he used to be before. She say like he used to make fun a lot before. He used to joke and to he was so active. Now most of the time he's just sitting watching TV. He don't go outside of the house. He refused to go out.
Hours after that interview last week, Israeli soldiers broke into the family's home around 2 o'clock in the morning. They took Amir from his bed, prevented his father and mother from protecting him as the soldiers assaulted and threatened them with their weapons. The Israeli soldiers took Amir downstairs under the stairwell and beat him brutally until he bled into his abdomen. Amir's parents rushed him to the hospital where he stayed overnight receiving emergency treatment. Amir wouldn't speak for another day and a half, exhibiting symptoms of excessive trauma and shock. Today, Amir is back home with his brother and family, but will most likely need a lifetime of mental health services. Abed Jamal, a researcher at Defense for Children International's Hebron office, talks about the role of the international community in terms of holding Israel accountable for its violations of international law, especially against Palestinian children.
لا شك إنه تأثير الاعتقال بالنسبة للأطفال على أهليهم.
And he say, of course, the like to arrest a kid, it affects the family so much in different levels. Like it affects the family, the brothers, the sisters, the father, you know. But in the same time, according to the history that we have, you know, since a long time, we are used to these things, you know, to have a lot of people inside the jails. Like in the first Intifada, for example, a lot of Palestinians, each family, they had someone inside the jail. In the same time, like it became like a routine. It's became part of our life to have a kid he's inside the jail, or to have someone from a family he's inside the jail. But that doesn't mean that we don't feel or we don't. It's right that we are used to it, but in the same time, it's hurt so much. It affects the family in a different ways. So. Even now, they try to work with the families and they try to support the families, because in general, all the Palestinians, to be honest, you know, all the Palestinians, they need psychological support. They need, you know, because of the things that they saw in their life and because of the way how the Israelis are trying to treat them.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're here in Hebron in the occupied West Bank, and we're at Defense for Children International. Can you talk about the legal proceedings? You know, you have attorneys working pro bono for free to defend these children and their families. Have you seen any successes? Have any Israeli soldiers or commanders gone to jail over the treatment that they have meted out against children? And because this is all, you know, illegal under international law, including the United Nations conventions on the rights of the child, has anybody been prosecuted because of their violations of this?
على صعيد جهود المؤسسة ومؤسسات أخرى عديدة عاملة وناشطة في حق حقوق الطفل الفلسطيني.
So he say most of the time they we can't talk about big things we achieve through our work, because first of all, the most of the lawyers, they are volunteers and they are trying to do their best to struggle against this Israeli military courts. And he say like most of the time, like we are trying to use the law. That's the only weapons that we can use against such kind of these things that the Israel use against our kids and against the Palestinians in general. So the only thing we can use is the Geneva Convention, the Children Convention, Childhood Rights Convention, the United Nations laws. But most of the time, the Israelis, they come and they say, that's a military court, you know? So all the laws in the world, if they say it's a military court, that all the laws doesn't exist anymore. So he say, we are trying to reach something, but the problem is they give us this excuse every time. And in the reality, like, we are doing, but at the same time we are not doing, you know. That's how it is now.
So the only recourse would be to have the international community and the United Nations actually step in and take these kinds of legal measures against Israeli commanders themselves because of the violations of international law.
Exactly. That's it. Exactly. He said, of course, that's something important to work with the international community, and now it's the only solution in front of us to do something. In this case, it's the international community. So what we are trying to do, or what we have to do, is to, as Palestinians, we have to work all together to create a big kind of solidarity in this case. Not only in the childhood or the children rights case, in general, as Palestinians. So through our work, we are trying to reach the international community, we are trying to tell about what's going on here, about different cases in Palestine, to create a kind of support for this. And we believe that the only way to reach an end for what's going on here is the international community, because they are the one who could do something against this occupation. No, they never had international lawyers. Most of the time, it's Palestinian lawyers who live inside Israel and who hold Israeli IDs, because even the Palestinian lawyers inside the West Bank, they are not allowed to be in military courts or the courts. They are not for the Israelis. According to the Israeli law, there is nothing called Palestine, so they don't. They are not exist anymore. So they use Palestinian lawyers who live inside the Green Line, like from 48, Arabs from 48, or from Jerusalem.
Can you give me some statistics, finally? How many children right now are in jail, and what is the youngest child in jail right now?
He say, like, from the beginning of the second intifada till today, like, the number itself, we can't tell about the number, it's expanding, and sometimes it's changeable, yeah. We say. So sometimes it's 1,000, sometimes it's 2,000. Depends. And all from the 2,000 till today, there is a lot of thousands of kids that were inside the Israeli jails. Right now, in these days, they had 350 kids inside the Israeli jails. They are separated in different places in Israel, and they are having a very bad situation inside the jail. Some of them they are under administration detention. Some of them they are already went to the courts and they are judged already inside the Israeli jails.
And how old are these kids? Give us a sense of how old they are.
Most of them, they are in between 14 and 18 years old. Like the majority, he said, the majority is between 14 years old and 18 years old. Yeah. I know a kid, he's in the jail. He's, I think, 1 year and a half, even less. الطفل هذا اللي أمه ودته في السجن.
He was born in jail, yeah.
Yeah, he was born in jail and he stay in the jail till now. He say, according to the international law, the age for the kids is like till 18 years old. In Israel, it's 16 years old, and this is also against the international law. At the same time, there is a special law inside Israel. It's called 132. It's allow the Israeli army to arrest kids who is more than 12, who reached 12 years old. You know, so in this way, they had legal cover for what they are doing.
أيضا في الاعتقال الأخير أو الطفلين اللي سألتين عنهم قبل شوي حسن.
He say in the last case you ask about these two kids. Even sometimes they are breaking their laws itself. Like we are talking about 132, which it is they are allowed to arrest kids from 12 years old. But in the last case, they arrest a kid. He was born in 1999, and they arrest him for a few hours. And a few hours for a kid in this age, that's mean a lot, you know. So even the Israelis, the laws inside Israel, it's changeable. So anytime they could change this law, anytime there is no law inside Israel at all.
I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. You're listening to a special report on Palestinian children brutalized under Israeli military policy. We now go to Dehesha refugee camp in southern Bethlehem, where 17-year-old Mohamed Lakhmour was taken last year by Israeli soldiers in the middle of the night, detained, interrogated, and sent to prison for nearly a whole year.
My name is Mohamed Lakhmour, and I'm 17 years old.
My name is Mohamed Lakhmour, and I am 17 years old now.
Okay, tell me about what you were doing the day that you were arrested.
فش يعني طبيعة الشيء يعني أنا كنت نايم وكنت ما كنت عارف إنه بدهم يأخذوني يعني متأكد 100%.
So he say when they come to arrest him, he was sleeping at home. The soldiers they come to the house and they enter to this flat first and they destroy everything here. Then they went to the second flat on the top. And his mother, she wake him up. She told him the soldiers are just in front of the house. And he told her, like, maybe they come to look for me. So they enter to the house. They ask about him. And he say, I'm Mohamed. They couldn't believe that he's Mohamed because he was very young in that time and he was short. So they didn't believe that he's the same person that they are looking for. And in the end, like, they arrest him from the house and they took him to the stairs just in front of the house.
بعدين يوم حكيت إن أنا مهند وهيك بعد ما صدقوا أحكوا لي دخلون
جوا. So he say after that like they didn't believe in the beginning that I'm مهند. Then after I improved that I'm the guy that they're looking for, they told me go inside wear something because we want to take you for half an hour, 1 hour maximum, and we'll send you back here. So when he went to inside to change his clothes, they fight with his brother Mustafa, and they beat Mustafa in the room where he was. And after that, they took Mohamed and they went down. They didn't let him say goodbye for his family. And when he went down, he say, "I would like to see my grandmother," and they refused to let him see her. And they beat him in that moment when he refused to go with them out unless he see his grandmother. Then they started beating him and they forced him to go with them.
بعد ما اخذوني بعد ما نزلت تحت وصارت المشكله اجى الضابط صار يحكي ما حداش يصيبه وهيك وطلعني ومشيت لعند الجيب.
After that, like the captain or the leader for the army, he came and he stopped them from beating him. And they asked him to walk till they reached the cars. There were two cars. So the soldiers, they went with him in the same car, and the leader for the army, he went in the other car. So they take it as an opportunity so they can beat him because, like, the leader of them, he's not in the car. So they were beating him all the way from here to Agos Asion Wadu. All the way from here to Gush Atzion. It's a military camp next to Bethlehem. They were beating him all the way from here till he reached there. It's around like 30 minutes from here, half an hour. That he say, like, when they were beating him, he was captured. Like, they put something in plastic in his hand, and his eyes was covered. So he didn't know who's beating him, or, like, he couldn't defend himself because he can't see the soldiers.
What were they saying to you as they were beating you?
إن وهم يضربوا فيا كانوا يغلطوا يعني بكي يعني بكي يسبسبوا يعني حكي مش منيح يعني سب وهذا.
Yeah, he said, like, most of the time they were saying bad words to him about the family, about his father, his mother, about him, himself. And they told him, you were trying to improve that you are a man and you are an adult, so you will pay a lot for that. And they say that you are a terrorist, you are someone who destroy, who is working against the Israeli state.
Okay, so then you got to Gush Etzion, and then they took you to Moscovie prison in Jerusalem, which is a very infamous detention center where people are tortured frequently before they're usually moved on to another prison or jail. Talk about what that was like.
أول ما ودونا على صيون سووا لي فحص طبي اللي بيشمل كل شيء بعد ما خلصنا ودونا على المسكوبية
وصلنا المسكوبية. He say like first when he got to Gush Etzion they make a health check for him, everything, you know, to be sure that he's okay, he's fine, there's no health problems with him. Then they transfer him from Gush Etzion في نفس اليوم. In the same day, they transfer him from there to Moscovia. And the moment he entered Al Moscovia, direct, they take him to, they start to ask him questions about what he did and what he's doing these days, what's his name, his everything, you know. And they were forcing him to say things that he did, some things he didn't do it, you know. They use a lot of different ways. They say, he said they were beating him. They use like individual rooms, small rooms. They put him alone for a week. They use different styles, you know, to force him to say things that he didn't do. So for Kadesh, 39 days he was alone. Every 1 week or 2 days, 3 days, when soldier he come, he pick him, ask him questions, take him a lot of through a lot of stages, then send him back to the room for 39 days.
What was going through your head as this was all happening? What were you thinking about? Were you able to sleep? Were you eating at all? What was going on?
بعد زي ما حكيتنا أول أسبوع يعني كنت متعود إن تعبت في أول أسبوع.
He say like the first week it was so bad for me. Like most of the time I was thinking about my mother, my family, my friends, what's gonna happen to me, how much I will stay in the jail. All these questions comes to my mind altogether. That wasn't the first week, but after that I start to deal with it as it's something normal, and I have to stay for more time. So I have to deal with it. I have to solve this problem. So I stop thinking like strongly about it, and I start to deal with the situation as it is. They told him a lot that we're gonna release you in the court and something like this. So he didn't even believe them, and he still think that even if I go to the court, I have to prepare myself for being here for more time. So that was the worst and the hardest time for him, the first week and you know the first 39 days. It was so hard for him to deal with it and to understand what's going on.
بعد ما صار الحكي هذا بالنسبة للأكل الأكل كانوا يجيبوا لنا يعني أشياء مش منيحة يعني
يدوا علينا نحن. So he say like about the food, like they used to bring them very bad quality food. It's like just, you know, just to eat, you know, just to live, to serve. And sometimes, a lot of times, they used to bring them a lot of expired things, you know, with expired date. And he say like, we were under the ground, in the jail itself, it's under the ground. So we didn't know if it's morning or night. We don't know what's the time or anything. And after that, they start to take us for like 10, 20 minutes outside in a square. But wherever you look, there's fence, you know. So even with the fence, it was the best moment for us. This 20 minutes was the best thing for us, because at least you can smell normal air, you can see the sun, you know. But even with that, still affect us a lot, you know.
After 5 weeks in Moscovia prison, where did they take you?
بعد ما خلص من المسكوبية صار ودوا فينا على محاكم يعني أول إشي في المسكوبية صار ودونا على المحاكم داخل المسكوبية.
He say they used to make the court in the same jail. So a lot of times like it's like administration detention we call it. Like 10 days they give him 10 days. After the 10 days finish he go to the court in the jail itself and they renew it for him. After that when they finish in Moscovia they transfer him to Ofer. It's near Ramallah. It's one of the only, I think now it's the only Israeli jail inside the West Bank, and it's next to Ramallah.
يوم وصلت عفر يوم ودونا على عفر هناك انبسطت يعني ما كانش في بالي الترويح يعني خلاص انه بديش اروح
لانه ما يعني سا when they transfer him to عفر he was so happy مبسوط and that عفر. Even if it's a jail but it's still better than Maskubia because at least he saw a lot of people from the Haitian refugee camp he know them there that he said like the people the Palestinians inside the jail they take care of us and because I was so young and they helped me a lot they bring me dresses they bring me they used to help me with the food with everything and that was the best and he prepared himself for more long term you know so he thought he because he, they transfer him from a small jail to a big jail he thought he will be like 2 or 3 years in the jail so but in, when he saw the people around him he started to feel better than when he was in Al-Maskubiya
And this was still under what they call administrative detention. So you weren't charged, you weren't convicted, you didn't have a trial. This was all just done internally within the Israeli military court system.
يعني لما كنت مسكوبي اجى المحامي ويعني رفع دعوى على على المحقق
So he said, like, when he was in Maskubiya, there were only this court under the administration detention, nothing more than this. And in the end, when the his lawyer came and he make a big problem for the soldiers because he spent like 39 days without trial, without anything. So they transfer him to Ofer. And after that, they come again from Ofer and they send him back to Maskubiya.
Really, back to Maskubiya?
Yes.
قديش المرة الثانية قعدت في Maskubiya?
بعد بأسبوعين ودونا على عفر بعد أسبوعين يعني كملت 39 يوم وإحنا قاعدين.
So they send him to عفر, they send him to Maskubiya for another 2 weeks. And after that they say for to the lawyer even you can't get involved in this story and you can't go to the court again against us because there is a big story and we have to take more time in
the process.
Yeah, in the process. And they force him to stop, like, from going to the court.
And just to be clear, what they were putting you in Maskubiya and Ofer prison and transferring you back and forth to and torturing you and beating you and all of this was for what?
هاي كانوا يسموها إجراءات عسفية يعني عشان يعني يحاولوا أثر عليكم جميع الجوانب يعني ما
يخلوكم. What they were waiting for? It's just to tell them, okay, just let me go out of this problem and they will work with you. So they were putting a lot of pressure, psychologists, different, you know, different kind of ways, just in the end, just to force you as a kid, you know. To force you to work with them and for them even if you are a kid you could help them so much because you are a kid and no one will believe that you are cooperating with the Israelis so that's the main idea from moving you to a place and bring you back putting you in jail punish you beating you all these things is just to let you work with them هل السؤال الثاني هم عرضوا عليك انك تشتغل معهم
لا ما عرضوا بس ما هيك بشكل عام
I asked him if they asked him to work with them or not. He said no, but this is what you can understand from all what they are doing.
At first it was yes to because he threw stones and because of his political affiliation. Yeah.
They say it's because they arrest him because he was throwing stones because he's BFLB, and because he used to do something against the Israelis during the night in the camp. And he say there is a lot of kids. They will arrest them before him. They improve or they say that Muhammad he was with us or Muhammad he throw stones or Muhammad whatever. And according to the Israeli law, if four guys come and they say Muhammad he did this, he will be judged even if he didn't say I do it. So any four guys if they go to the Israelis and they say yes this guy he did this, even if you say no. They will judge you. You don't have time to negotiate or to talk about it. They didn't allow you to talk.
It's conviction by hearsay, by torture and interrogation techniques, which is all illegal under international law, especially against children.
Yeah, of course. And one of the things also he said, they told him in the beginning, if you sign this paper and you agree that you did all these things, you'll spend here 1 week and then we will release you. But he refused because he didn't do anything like this.
And because they told him at the very beginning when they came to get him that he was only going to be gone half an hour, maybe an hour at most. Right. And it turned into 1 year.
1 year.
So the second time after Maskubiya prison, you went back to Ofer?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you spent another, 8, 9 months in Ofer prison, yeah?
Yes. يعني كيم 39 يوم كيم مسكوا بيه.
He say like most of the time he spend it in the same jail after they transfer him from Muscovia. He spent exactly 9 months in Muscovia in Ofer. And he say like I stayed in the same section, in the same tent, in the same bed for 9 months. I refused to move to another place or anything. He say like they take me to the court before they judge me 4 times. And in the end, because the Israelis, they were asking for more than 1 year for him. But the lawyer, he say like that he's 16 years old, he don't have an ID, so they said 12 years. Yeah, 12 months. And actually, this is something from me I would like to add about the months. You know, in Israel, they deal with the Hebrew year, which does mean it's 9 months. The year is 9 months. So when, for example, any Palestinian go to the jail and they say 7 years, 7 years in the Hebrew calendar, you know. But because they want them to spend like a normal year, like, you know. So they say, for example, 42 months. 50 months, 12 months. So in this way, they spend the year like normal year, which it is 12 months.
Okay, what was it like coming back home after a year of being away from your family, your community, your friends? What was that like for you?
آخر يوم كان اللي في السجن كان يعني بصراحة كان يعني ما كنتش مبسوط كثير من الدروح.
He say like the day before he left the jail, he was so upset. It's not because that he don't want to be free. It's because the guys that he know in the jail and the relationship between him and the he create a good friendship with the guys in the jail, and he learn a lot from them, and they learn a lot from him. So it was not easy for him to just to leave like this, you know, like 1 year as nothing happened. So when he went out next day, the first moment he wasn't